Welcome to It's Our Money with Ellen Brown, a look behind the curtain of global finance and monetary control with one of the top experts in the field. Author of the bestseller Web of Debt and the Public Bank Solution, Ellen Brown's pioneering research started the national movement to create new American public banks. We'll look at developments in the banking industry, economics, and money itself, and we'll update you on developments on the public banking frontier. Our program is underwritten by Payment Management Merchant Credit Card Services at paymentmgmt.com.
This is one aspect, one of the two important aspects of the crisis, which is to stamp out the liberty and democracy and subordinate it to centralized control in Brussels. And so if the precedent is established with Greece, it can then be used against Italy and Spain and eventually France and Germany themselves. So it's really imperative that the Greeks not permit that.
That's today's guest, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. When is a debt crisis merely a stratagem for a larger play for power? We're watching that test of wills in the exciting, troubling, and illustrative Greek tragedy playing out in Greece's efforts to remain in the European Union. Hello, and welcome to It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. I'm Walt McCree. And today we're continuing our look at the many dimensions and illusions that surround the issues of Greek debt and Greek sovereignty. We're pleased to once again have as our guest the venerable Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who returns to the program to give us the backstory on what's really at play in Athens and in Brussels. He and Ellen will be along shortly with their discussion. Thanks to the time-shifting ability of recorded interviews, our discussions today straddle two different developments. The period just before the resounding Greek no vote, when the pollsters were saying it was too close to call, and the aftermath of recent days in which the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, which is commonly called the Troika, try to figure out how they'll adjust to, or resist, or further undermine the outpouring of democratic intent. Paul Craig Roberts, who worked as an assistant U.S. Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan, is one of the very few people who have lived and worked inside the bubble of Washington power and has a clear understanding of how these crises are used as part of the global power plays set in action by the collaboration of international politics and central banks. Don't miss his insights. Also on our program today, Ellen will be discussing her solution for how Greece can survive the current moment with flying colors and much less financial devastation. Her solution utilizes the new understanding about money creation and the emerging capabilities of digital finance. And Matt Stannard will be along with the public banking report with observations about how the power of the people in Germany are facing off with the EU over its presumptive attempts to wrest control and power from their public banks, who have not only been a stellar outlier of successful banking, but also have offered to assist the Greeks with creative solutions for financing its debts. Now, let's talk with Ellen about this greasy mess we find ourselves in.
Right now, this is Tuesday, they're once again trying to negotiate some sort of deal, but apparently there's no deal on the table, so that's not likely to happen. And they're looking, the Greek leadership, Varoufakis, has resigned, and so they have a new finance minister. But the Greek leadership is looking to stay in the euro, as they've always said they wanted to do, or in the EU. But it's looking more and more likely like that they may not be able to, which means they would go to the drachma. But if they stay in the euro, with the euro, then they have the problem of that they've been cut off by the European Central Bank from everything, you know, from liquidity, which so actually that's what caused the problem in the first place. I mean, that's what put them in these dire straits. The crisis is a banking crisis. Businesses can't get credit, and therefore they have to lay people off. They're not able to operate, and so the GDP is going down. People are out of work, et cetera, and so it gets worse and worse. I mean, you need credit to run to run an economy, and they can't get it. And the ECB, the European Central Bank, cut them off from liquidity in February, as soon as the Syriza party was elected. And they threatened to do that. Goldman Sachs threatened that was what was going to happen in December if the Syriza party was elected, which is the, you know, anti-austerity party. And that's what did happen. They cut them out of liquidity, and they put them on emergency liquidity assistance, which costs more, and they can cut it off at any time. But here's the thing. You have to understand how banking works to understand why it absolutely is the duty of the central bank to provide liquidity. And without that, the whole banking system can't work. It's because, as the Bank of England recently acknowledged, banks do not lend their deposits. They do not act as intermediaries, taking in deposits and then lending them out. They actually create deposits when they make loans, and that's where virtually all of our money comes from. That's what the Bank of England said, that 97% of their money comes from banks creating loans in that way. So they can create loans until the cows come home, but the problem is clearing the checks when, like, they create the loan, but if somebody withdraws money from the bank, they need to have some cash on hand for that. Or if the check transfers from one bank to another, like you borrow to buy a house and then you pay your seller and the seller puts the check in another bank, Bank A suddenly now has insufficient reserves and Bank B has excess reserves. So what happens is that Bank A borrows from Bank B or from the banking system in general, but effectively what's happening is they create money, it goes into another bank, and they borrow it back in order to balance their books. So they borrow it back in the U.S. at the Fed funds rate of 0.25%, which is like very cheaply. So they borrow it back very cheaply, and they lend it out at a nice interest rate and keep the spread. So it's a money generating machine, and it works great as long as you can get the liquidity from other banks, or if all the banks don't have enough, like you've created too many loans here, then it's the function of the central bank to create more and to lend it to the banks. And so this central bank has cut them off from that, so they can't make loans. So then the question is, how can they stay in the euro if they want to? Apparently they do want to. And without the ECB, and I think they can. And so this is what I'm going to write on next. But I'll just say this here in case I get my ideas out here, see what you think, see if this would work.
So how are they going to make this work?
They're talking about nationalizing the banks. So let's say they nationalize all the banks. Then it's all one system, publicly owned. Those banks should start lending because what they need is more liquidity, more credit. They need to get credit to their businesses. They could lend to the government to then do all those services that they haven't been able to do, but maybe there's a rule against the government going to further into debt. So let's say they just lend directly to businesses. They can lend to all those businesses that they know are good credit risks. It's just that they haven't had the liquidity to lend to them up till now. So lend to all of them, get the economy going again, and then for the liquidity, you borrow from each other the way banking system works. And what they're actually talking about is borrowing from taking over their own central bank and using the printing press. It has a printing press. It's able to print euros. But this would be a clear break from EU rules. But what they could do without using the printing press is you don't actually need cash as long as you stay within a digital system. If you only use checks and credit cards and debit cards, the whole thing will work and it all balances. And so the only problem is when somebody wants to withdraw cash or when they transfer to, say, a foreign bank that's not part of your system, then you're going to have to come up with the cash. So the possibilities are, one possibility would be to actually go to an all-digital system. I know there's a lot of furor over that possibility when it's run by private banks. But if it's run by a public bank, basically what you've got is just one big community currency system or one big credit system, credit clearing system. And again, that would be fair and that would work. It would be rather like Roosevelt declaring, you know, that everybody had to turn in their gold. I mean, it would be radical, but you could just say in 6 weeks or whatever, 2 months, we're going to go to an all-digital system. And so you're cash isn't going to be any good, so turn in your cash and we'll give you digital credits. But another possibility would be to just give a premium for people who turn in their cash and charge a fee for taking out cash. And that's actually what the Alberta Treasury branches did in the 1930s when they set up a public system in Alberta to defy the private banks that were gouging the people. So what you do is, let's say you could, if you turn in 100 euros, you get 110 euro credit in the digital system. And if you pull out your money, you get you have to pay a fee, and you can also pay a nice interest rate for people keeping their deposits in the bank. So those are my ideas. What do you think?
Well, those are great ideas. I think you ought to be the new finance minister and take over Giannis's job. you had mentioned I hate to see him go. He was a very colorful, bright guy. And his comment about wearing the loathing of the Troika's animus was a sign of he appreciated wearing.
Yeah, Roosevelt said the same thing. He said something like that. I welcome that. They were out to kill him. He said that they hate me, and I welcome their whatever it was. I welcome their hatred or their whatever it was.
Now, you had mentioned in a conversation in Ireland that the Maastricht Treaty, when it was founded, allowed for the creation of public banks, or using the public banks as depositories. Wasn't that does that play in here at all relative to an EU allowance if they would want to create a public bank?
It allowed that if you have public banks, many countries already have public banks, that the government itself was not allowed to borrow directly from the central bank, but that there was an exclusion for publicly owned banks, so that their bank could borrow from the ECB, even though the government couldn't. And so that would be a way that they could get more liquidity at cheap rates, and then they can borrow from their own banks, or that, that money will just go into the system and help generate credit for the system.
The small banks in Greece that are private now, you say, can borrow from the EU. Is that right, or have they been cut off as well?
They've been cut off. There's only four banks, and they're the ones that have been, their liquidity has been dried up, yeah.
So you're talking about basically creating sort of a parallel system implemented through digital arrangements, and that the new currency would presumably float in some sort of a par value with the euro, right?
No, I'm talking about actually using euros. Banks create money in the official currency of the land. So just as British banks create pounds and U.S. banks create dollars, Greek banks can create all the euros they want. The only problem is they have to have the liquidity to clear their checks. But this can be done because they've just created a lot of extra money somewhere in the system. They can find that money in order to balance their books if they can borrow it back. If they go to a drachma, yes, indeed, it will be a parallel currency another currency, and they will have to deal with short sellers, and the currency will drop radically. But on the other hand, there's pluses and minuses on that. It makes their imports more expensive, but their exports cheaper.
Yeah. And if we're going to tour Greece next year, we should come armed with Greek digits.
Yeah, they will have to put on capital controls, which is what all these countries do, like Malaysia and Iceland and Argentina. But it works. It's a good thing for the time being. But what it means is you basically walk in and change your money at the door, pick it up on the way out.
Well, it seems now that the final section is playing out. Do you want to make any predictions on who's going to accommodate whom? Or as Paul Craig Roberts, as you know, he's surprised the U.S. hasn't told them to print the money and to keep Greece in the eurozone. How do you think it's going to play out?
I think it's actually just the beginning, and the beginning of something rather exciting, that they're free to do something different. If they go to the drachma, I think it could turn out well. But if they want to stay with the euro, I think they could do that too, and that could turn out well.
All right, so we're past all of the crisis talk as far as the end of the world if they don't pay the IMF. But now we're down to brass tacks about how they're going to make their economy work and run. We'll keep watching the Greek channel for the next couple of weeks. I hope that they know that you're out there and are available to give them a solution.
Okay. honor and pleasure to be talking to Paul Craig Roberts, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under President Reagan, the author of 12 books, a former editor and columnist for The Wall Street Journal and Business Week, and currently chairman of the Institute for Political Economy. It's so great to talk to you, Craig.
I always enjoy speaking with you, Ellen.
Thanks. Well, the Greek crisis has finally come to a head with the Greek government defaulting on its IMF loans and a referendum set for Sunday, July 5th, on whether the people should accept the deal proposed by the creditors. The Syriza leaders say to vote no. This is July 1st that we're pre-recording this interview, so we don't know the outcome yet, but we can discuss the deeper currents at play. You posted an article today in which you said the fate of Western liberty and even life on Earth is at stake. That's a pretty strong warning. I wondered if you could expand on that.
Sure. What this so-called debt crisis is about, or how it's being used by the EU and the Troika, is to destroy the sovereignty of the individual member states of the European Union. It's not really about the Greek debt. It's about taking away from the member governments their sovereignty over their tax and budget policy, and relocating it in the European Union. When this so-called sovereign debt crisis emerged, the current at that time head of the European Central Bank, Trichet, explicitly said that this was a purpose of the crisis and would be an outcome, that the member states would be more firmly centralized under control in Brussels. And so what we're watching in Greece, and you can see it again in the resounding no that the Troika gave the Greek government when it asked for a week's extension in order that the Greek people could decide themselves, the Troika says no. In other words, there's no room for democracy or for the Greek people to have any role in deciding their own fate. And so this is one aspect, one of the two important aspects of the crisis, which is to stamp out the liberty and democracy and subordinate it to centralized control in Brussels. And so if the precedent is established with Greece, it can then be used against Italy and Spain and eventually France and Germany themselves. So it's really imperative that the Greeks not permit that. And the only way they can prevent it, unless the Troika bends, is for the Greeks to default and leave the EU. That would start unraveling, because the Italians and the Spanish, they're in the same fix. Mm-hmm. And they'll receive the same treatment. And if they look at it, they'll say, well, let's do what Greece did. And so this would unravel the EU. Now, to get to the second part of the question, what does it have to do with life on Earth? Well, for the last couple of years, Washington has been putting tremendous pressure on Russia and tremendous pressure on the European Union countries to enter into conflict with Russia. There are the sanctions. There are the new troop bases, artillery bases, missile bases on the Russian border. There's the Ukraine situation, where Washington organized a coup against the democratic government in order to remove one that was more or less allied with Russia. And the rhetoric against Russia and against their president keeps becoming more extreme, more hostile. American political leaders have described the Russian president as the new Hitler, that Russia is more dangerous than Ebola, more dangerous than the Islamic State. And all of this is pushing toward war. And what is the mechanism? It's NATO. It's the EU and NATO. That's the mechanism that Washington uses to generate conflict with Russia. And so if these countries leave the EU, they're likely to leave NATO. And thus the empire of Washington breaks down, and it loses the mechanism that it has to have in order to generate conflict with Russia. So what I suggested is that it's just like 2,500 years ago when the Greeks stood between West and Persia. And today, the role of Persia is played by Washington and its European vassal states, just as Persia had all those vassal states. And so Greece really has an opportunity to save the West again, to save liberty, to save us from a war that would be nuclear, and thus preserve life. And probably not only does Greece have this opportunity, they have the responsibility. And they should simply announce that since all the EU wants to do is loot Greece and take away its sovereignty, that they don't want to participate in the EU and that they have left. And that since the loans were in many ways fraudulent to start with, they renounce them. And this, I think, would begin the unraveling. And we would see again the return of liberty, of sovereignty, where the people themselves at least have some input into the decisions. And it would take away the NATO mechanism that Washington is using for conflict with Russia.
You wrote in that article that they could basically prevent Armageddon by defaulting on the debt and turning to Russia. So in what way would they turn to Russia? Is Russia offered money? Is it offered an alliance? What would?
Oh, yes. Russia has offered them to be part of the Eurasian Economic Corporation, and it's offered them loans or financing. It didn't even say they were loans, but it's offered them financing. And so I think that if the Russians offer them financing, then that would give the Greek government a breathing time to reestablish the Greek currency. You know, if they just bring it in, then New York and London and the European Central Bank will do everything they can to destroy it. You know, they'll short it, they'll try to drive it down, you know, like they did to the Russian ruble a few months back. So, but if it's got some backing, that makes it harder for the West to try to destroy the new Greek currency as revenge. So, yes, it would be much in Greece's interest to join the Eurasian Union, because this is the economic direction Russia, the BRICS, China, of world development. I think the West is exhausted and has ruined itself by offshoring to China and India so many of the manufacturing and tradable professional service jobs, which have so seriously curtailed employment opportunities in the United States and Europe. So the future is not the U.S. or Europe or Japan. The future is Russia, India, China. And the Greeks should join up with that.
I just read that the Syriza leaders were threatening to sue the EU for if they kick them out of the Eurozone. But I don't understand why. I mean, is this just a ploy to... Are they just putting... They know that the EU is not going to agree, and so they're pushing them right to the end so that the people think that... I mean, can see that it's... That the fault is totally on the part of the EU, or do they really actually want to stay in the EU? And if they do want to stay in, why? I don't understand how that would serve them.
I couldn't answer that because I'm not them. I had a chance to go there and recently to be a part of that Delphi conference, but I really just couldn't go. So I haven't spoken to them directly and couldn't answer. I think that the Greek government wants to have public support for whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the public has seen the inflexibility of the Troika, of the European Union, and the IMF and the Central Bank, and that any illusions the Greek people may have had that somehow this could be worked out and they could stay in the EU, I think that's been pretty much shattered by the behavior of the so-called Troika. That means the European Central Bank, the European Union, and the IMF. And so this may be the Greek government bringing that message home. Stronger.
Yeah, I thought maybe that. You also suggested that they could get assassinated if they actually, if they just outright left the euro. So if they're forced out, that might prevent any bodily threat to themselves.
Yes, I think that if Washington is thinking, which they don't always do, you know, arrogance and hubris often pushes thought out of the way.
Uh huh.
But if Washington is thinking, they will see that a Greek departure could very easily spread because there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the EU. In fact, the populations of several of the countries voted against it, but their governments took them in anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the countries most in debt stand to all suffer. Like Greece. In fact, Ireland did. You know, the Irish paid a huge price for staying in the EU with their debt. And the same fate awaits Italy and Spain and Portugal, and eventually possibly even France. So there's a lot of reason for the EU to dissolve. It was never a good idea. It was supposed to simply be a free trade zone among Europe, not a centralized European government over the member countries. And I think if Washington were to realize the danger of Greek departure, they would simply say, no, you can't do that. And the Greek government would realize it meant they would be assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that's a problem that they're probably aware of.
They may take them into a little room and make those threats in private. Maybe those threats have already been made. Who knows?
They may have already been made, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some time ago, there was talk in England about leaving the EU. One of the political types in the ruling government at this moment. And another country, I forget what it was, may have been Germany. And an American government official called both countries and said, don't talk about this anymore. It's not in the interest of the United States for you to leave the EU. And it all went quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was even reported in the mainstream media. So it's clear that the EU is valuable to Washington because it's easier to control the EU than all those separate countries. It takes less effort, fewer people to bribe, to pay off, and fewer people you have to threaten. So I don't think Washington would be happy that the Greeks left.
Right.
So that's what surprised me, Ellen, is that Washington hasn't called up the Troika and say, look, just print the money and pay off the debts. We don't want them out. I'm surprised that hasn't happened.
Right. Well, that is what I want to get into, what their alternatives are. I mean, that's very interesting. Assuming they leave the Eurozone, they had this commission that found that the debt was odious. It was called the Truth Committee on Public Debt. Can they just write off the debt and nationalize the banks and issue their own currency and go on? Or what would you say their best option is?
Well, that would be my choice. You know, why shouldn't they have a bank like in North Dakota?
Right. That would be my choice.
Have a public bank.
Right.
I mean, you could also have, you know, some private commercial banks, smaller banks to lend to businesses or something if you wanted to. But I think that
they could all be public banks. Yeah.
Well, they could all be.
It could be on the model of the German Sparkassen, where they have local public banks that fund the local economy, and they're limited to the local economy.
I think it's much better.
There's so much potential there, yeah.
Right. It's much better than what we've got in the United States. So, yeah, I would say just go public bank option.
Yeah, set up a central bank that's your own central bank that can back up your own private banks, if they're going to be private, or make them all public. They could all be nationalized as far as that goes. And
right.
Then you don't need capital. What you do is you do letters of credit to back up these loans and just issue credit as needed. And if you run out of reserves or run out of liquidity, you borrow from your own central bank, which prints the money, because that's what they do anyway. But they do it privately, and they control who gets the money. They control how much is issued, et cetera, and they're not funding those businesses that get the economy going again. I mean, that's the way they do it here in the U.S. So, I mean, it seems to me that there's so much potential in Greece to start over and do something really good. And Varoufakis, the finance minister, it seems to me, understands what can be done. So he may have all sorts of cards just waiting to play. I saw an article by him where he said that they could use the Bitcoin model, not for the Bitcoin, but for the it was the algorithm. So you could do basically a digital currency, which would be based on future taxes. So it would be an advance against future taxes. So it would be discounted, so you make a nice profit if you wait a couple of years before you cash it out. It would be basically like in the Middle Ages when they had the tally system, where they issued tallies against future taxes, and that was their currency. So Varoufakis understands all those possibilities, and just by the way you see him smiling in the photos, it makes you think that he's holding his cards close to the chest and he has something ready to play when they have the clear go-ahead to do it.
Well, I think that would be a huge improvement in the fortunes of Greece. I hope that is what happens. Of course, that makes him even more dangerous, because now he becomes dangerous not just to Washington, but to the banksters, to Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan,
right.
And Barclays, and so there could be a second set of assassins after him.
Right. You also wrote that the Greek people are being made to pay for the creditors' mistakes, especially those of Goldman Sachs. I always wondered about Goldman Sachs. I mean, they seem to be, they have their tentacles in everything. They've been called an octopus that has its tentacles in everything. What role did they play in the whole EU and in the whole financialization of everything in the Eurozone and the whole banking system? Or do you know?
Well,
who are they?
There are people everywhere. For example, the current head of the European Central Bank is a former Goldman Sachs person. And if you remember, when the governments of Greece and Italy were removed and people were appointed to take the positions of the removed prime ministers, they were appointed, I think, by the Troika, not elected. The guy they put in charge of Italy was a former Goldman Sachs. And in fact, if I remember correctly, they removed the entire Italian government. There wasn't a single elected minister in Italy for several months. And they removed, you may remember, a previous Greek government the prime minister said, well, he wants to have a referendum on this. And he was removed by the Troika, forced out of office, and they appointed somebody. I can't remember if he also was Goldman Sachs or just a former central bank person. So clearly the banksters had control over the sovereignty of the government. They could remove prime ministers, remove government ministers, and stick in their own people to be sure the decisions were made that the banksters wanted. So they're everywhere there. And, you know, banking, as far as I can tell, Western banks, certainly the big New York banks, let's put it that way, the New York banks that are too big to fail, I can't see that they any longer perform a socially useful role or even an economically useful role. They seem to be a source of great instability. These massive, highly leveraged derivative exposures they have, that I don't think anyone understands the consequences. And the way they throw their weight around, for example, for 7 years now, the policy of the Federal Reserve has been only in the interest of about four big banks. You know, the entire population of retirees in the United States have been denied any interest income in order that three or four big banks can borrow from the Fed at zero interest rates.
Yeah. It seems to me if we could get that banking system away from the big banks, I mean, we could use those same tools so effectively to generate credit for the local economies, cheap credit for, I mean, you could use it for so many things. You could do basic income. You could do education. Yeah. But
yeah,
instead,
I think that the big banks need to be busted up and nationalized.
Right.
I don't see any point of them. They don't perform a socially useful role. They are a source of great instability.
Mm-hmm. And then their argument is that the derivatives are, you can't unwind them. But why not? Couldn't you just say those are just bets, and we're now declaring that banks cannot make, you know, it's illegal for banks to gamble.
I would just declare them null and void.
Yeah. You couldn't just zero them all out, or why would that be?
That's what I would do. I'd just say, well, look, you made the bet. The bet's off.
Yeah, I suppose people would argue.
I don't think we can afford to listen to those banks, because our interest is not anything they consider. So I think simply you just have to use force against them, nationalize them, break them up. I mean, they should never have allowed the banks to get this big.
Mm-hmm. And Greece is in that position.
Well, yes, it'd be. I mean, it would take. It have to be a revolutionary act.
Yeah, and they're in the position to do it because their banks are bankrupt and they're shutting their doors. So they can open their doors like Roosevelt did with a totally different system. I think it's quite exciting. I'm waiting to see what they're going to open up and reveal.
Yeah, I hope that they just have the courage to go forward. You know, they'll get so many threats and denunciations, and you know they're excluded.
And there'll be this great effort to trash their currency. Yeah,
and that's right. Whatever currency they come out with, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, the hedge funds, Goldman Sachs, everybody will jump on it with cleats and claws and daggers and everything. They'll try to make it a total failure and worth nothing.
But then they can implement capital controls. I've read they never work, but it seems to me they work for Malaysia and they work for Iceland. So
they always work. They always work. When they say they never work, that's just the free
propaganda,
market shills making excuses for,
Okay.
That's all it is. No, you're right. This is an opportunity for the Greeks to show the world the future path. It's why I said it's like all over again. You know, it's like Marathon, Thermopylae. The battles that defeated Darius and Xerxes and got rid of the menace to the West. It's the same thing all over again. And if they have the courage to go forward, I mean, maybe they should try to get into some kind of a currency union with Russia and China.
Can you define currency union?
Well, I don't know. They just have to invent it. They just have to say, look, we're somehow pegging our currency to the ruble and to the Chinese currency. And if Russia and China supported it, it would be doable. You see, this is also in Russia and China's interest, because they don't want the war that Washington is pushing toward them. You know, they're forced to spend on armaments to distract themselves from development, because Washington has this policy of surrounding both countries with military bases. You know, Washington is not content just to go after Russia in Ukraine. They're also causing troubles in Armenia, in Kyrgyzstan. They'll try to turn these former constituent parts of the Soviet Union into American puppet states, just like Georgia, and like their intention for Ukraine, and the way they've done with the Baltics and Eastern Europe. And China is faced with this construction of new air and naval bases to ring them in order for Washington to control the South China Sea. So they don't want this diversion of money into these armaments and the attention of the government diverted into what's Washington going to do to us next. They're trying to deal with their economies, and that's what they want to do. So if Greece breaks out, then that increases, as we've already said, the chance that all of Southern Europe would.
Yeah, and particularly if they do it successfully, if their economy thrives,
right,
as it probably
right.
will. Argentina did it, and Iceland did it, and
yeah.
came out the better for it. So it is pretty exciting, really.
So, see, Russia and China have a great incentive to make it work for Greece.
Right.
And if they back the Greeks up in this, then it has a much better chance of working. And then you would see the rest. I think Hungary would leave, Czech Republic. See, already Austria wants out of the EU. I don't think Austria's in NATO, but I think they're in the EU, and I think they want out. They see it as an infringement on their sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. I mean, you really can't
right.
have an independent country if you don't have your own currency.
Right.
You're not independent. I mean, you've made this point over and over.
Yeah, it's definitely bringing it to a head. It's becoming really obvious now. Well, you're such a visionary. I get new ideas for articles whenever I talk to you or hear you in other interviews. I know
you're
really busy and need to get back to your work, so I won't keep plying you with questions, although I could think of more. But it's really great to talk to you and to hear your overview on everything.
Well, you know, I think your work in public banking is really crucial. It's really critical, and it blows my mind that that's not the way we developed. We somehow let a handful of crooks get a hold of the monetary system, and so Americans are essentially suffering in the same way the Greeks are. No one wins with the banks.
Yeah, our democracy went the same way. I mean, you can corrupt anything. that is the problem, setting something up that can't be corrupted.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you good luck with your work.
Oh, thanks so much. I've been speaking with Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Reagan and currently Chairman of the Institute for Political Economy.
We're all Greeks now. Seems like there's been an increasing number of opportunities lately to identify with our fellow citizens all over the world who are facing off against a variety of challenges to their rights, their assets, and their futures. Now, this isn't a bad thing, of course, because taking a stand against the powers that be, who would overrule and overrun local interests and people, is a fundamentally democratic response, and the only chance we have to take back control of our money and our lives. It's work that takes intelligence and insight, dedication and organization. especially when you're dealing with the global banksters, who are only focused on the control and extraction of public assets for profit. The Public Banking Institute's Matt Standard takes a look at another angle of this Greek saga, and an ironic one at that, which looks at how German public banks, the Sparkassen, offered to help the Greeks. While Germany's top official, Angela Merkel, who has been leading the Troika attitude against the Greeks, continues to try to put the screws to them.
Traditional banking models have failed to end the stalemate between Greece and the European Central Bank. No surprise there, but what's the alternative? I'm Matt Stannard with the Public Banking Report, and as it turns out, the alternative has been serendipitously close to Greece for a little while now. You see, Greece is not the only country in conflict with the European Central Bank. One country in Europe has a number of thriving public banks, and one of those public banks is suing the ECB for exemption from regulations imposed on private banks of its size. The German public bank, which we will call the L Bank, is suing the European Central Bank to avoid coming under EU supervision and regulation, which would increase L Bank's costs and fees. L Bank argues that higher costs tied to ECB supervision would undermine its ability supporting local families and businesses, supporting ordinary people, is very important to L Bank, important enough that they're taking the European Central Bank to court over it. So you might say that a little piece of Germany has a common struggle with Greece against the European Central Bank. The struggle is over whether the ECB will allow humane and rational financial practice, or will instead make the weak subject to the whims of the powerful. The terms that the European Central Bank has been imposing on Greece aren't just about austerity. They're not just about Greece accepting sharp cuts in salaries, pensions, and public goods. The terms have also always been about banking itself. The terms have always been about making Greece pay the maximum borrowing costs. As Mark Weisbrot pointed out a few months ago, the European Central Bank could have stabilized Greek bonds at low levels. And as Ellen Brown pointed out about the same time, all banks are reliant on central bank liquidity because all banks lend money they don't have. The question is, who has the power to demarcate the legitimacy of credit lent? In the Eurozone, everyone turns that power over to the ECB. But some countries were in better positions than others going into that arrangement. And so Greece, who had led the bailouts for Germany decades ago, was especially vulnerable to the risky loans the Greeks had to enter into to become part of the exclusive club in the first place. The loans the European Central Bank is now blaming Greece for were bad loans financed by the European Central Bank. Goldman Sachs played its part too, helping Greece get into the Eurozone with a questionable derivative scheme that both Matt Taibbi and Ellen Brown have explained in recent work. And as Ellen Brown adds, Goldman then turned around and hedged its bets by shorting Greek debt. And as Pam and Russ Martins pointed out a few days ago, according to investigative reports that appeared in Der Spiegel, The New York Times, BBC, and Bloomberg News, Goldman Sachs engineered complex derivative deals with Greece, which accomplished two things. They allowed Greece to hide the true extent of its debt, and they ended up almost doubling the amount of debt Greece owed over the dubious derivative deals. One of those derivative loans, for example, turned a 2.8 billion euro debt into a 5.1 billion euro debt in 4 years. Was anyone surprised Greece would be in trouble after 2008? Can anyone look at the situation in Greece and not say, there has to be a better way than this? And so it seems academic to simply say that public banks would have saved Greece. But before all hell broke loose, Germany was poised to help Greece out in the form of savings banks, public savings banks, the German SBFIC, Savings Bank Foundation for International Cooperation, had proposed a pilot project on the Sparkassen model, a German public bank model for Greece. That we ended up with the present German position instead of an offer to share the gift of the Sparkassen model with Greece is a ruling class tragedy. The wrong plan won in Germany, even though they've benefited from their public banks, and they're telling the ECB that they don't want to give them up. But that struggle is not over yet. As Greece considers its options, and we consider ours on this side of the Atlantic, we need to point out stories like this, that Germany won't give up its public banks, that people are willing to share models, and that growing numbers of people are realizing that big banks and the regional central banks that facilitate them don't know what to do with our money.
That's Matt Standard of the Public Banking Institute. We ought to throw in a piece of encouragement here about how the global banksters are actually getting a piece of comeuppance here in America at the hands of some courageous and outraged county supervisors in Santa Cruz County, California. At the end of June, the county supervisors voted to stop doing business with five of these banks who recently pled guilty to fraud and rate rigging of markets, which affected the amount of money that municipalities and counties have to pay in interest for their debt service. The supervisors basically said that they would not do business with criminals and said that these five banks, which included J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and others, would be barred from doing business with the city for at least 5 years. And while the county's several hundred millions of dollars under bank management won't break any of these banks, it sets an important example and an opening for a new front line of action for the public to take through its representatives, and in the process helps to stanch the criminal stench that has been emanating from Wall Street for years. Apparently Santa Cruz was tired of waiting for the Department of Justice to do something more effective than slapping the wrists of these bad bankers, and they took a stand to comply with the law that's on the books in many municipalities, which prohibits them from doing business with criminals. Congratulations, and thank you, Santa Cruz County. Well, in an effort to not make this program all Greece all the time, there's another relevant piece of news in the world of money and economies, perhaps an even more fundamental one, which reflects on what money really is. Many, of course, consider it just a commodity, a necessary evil even, when its most basic dimension is really that of relationship between people and their sense of common responsibility. Money itself, of course, is not good or bad, but its applications reflect the intentions and relationships of those who manage and exchange it. Because it has the power to impact life in so many ways, it has a moral dimension often overlooked by both power brokers and citizens alike. Your money makes a difference. Where you invest it, how you use it, how you share it, helps constitute the fabric of social, cultural, and political life. That resulting set of values was reflected by Pope Francis in his recent encyclical about what he considers to be the true economy of the world, that is, the economy of life and the living, and how our evolved practice of giving a monetary denominator and value to everything has torn us away from the responsibilities and the opportunities to make the world work for everyone and everything, with no one and no thing left out, as Buckminster Fuller would say. Ellen has been reflecting on this also, and detected an interesting historical component of how the institutional forebears of Pope Francis set the stage for today's public banks.
I just wrote an article about the Pope, quoting something from his latest encyclical, where he said that we needed to rethink the outdated criteria that rule the world, which is a pretty radical thing. He had a whole section on how we needed to reform the banking system, that it wasn't enough just to put on more rules to regulate them more, but that we actually had to radically rethink the whole thing. The fact that he had taken the name Francis, which is after Saint Francis, who was, you know, the saint of the poor, a very humble man, rather than Ignatius, who is the founder of the Jesuits, and this Pope was a Jesuit priest from Argentina, cardinal, I guess. He's adopted this persona of caring for the people, and he's got this reputation now of being the revolutionary pope, and he certainly does seem to be doing some rather revolutionary things, at least saying revolutionary things. What prompted me to write it was that it was the Franciscan monks who founded the public banking system in the Middle Ages. At that time, it was not only immoral, but actually illegal for Catholics to lend money at interest because it was considered a violation of the prescription against usury. But the Jews were allowed to do it. But the problem is, because they were supposedly ruled by different scriptures, but the problem was that that gave them a monopoly, and they were charging really high interest rates, like 60%, and that was impoverishing the poor. So the Franciscans defied the other orders and established these pawn shops that were called Montes Pietatis, which were basically pawn shops for the poor, where they could bring in whatever collateral they had and get cash for them at low interest rates. And that was very controversial at the time, but eventually it was accepted that this was a good thing, and that was the basis of the German public banks and other public banks in Europe. So I'm hoping the Pope knows about that. Maybe he'll adopt it in his...
It's also interesting to note that the original Francis, the real Saint Francis, was not very much liked by the Roman bishops at all, because he was pretty much of an outlier. And so, you know, while that history has been rewritten, it's interesting just to see its parallel in today's application. Well, clearly, you know, money rules the world, and whether it's in the hands of the bishops or the hands of the private bankers, we see the same thing playing out, that the morality play of economics continues to lean toward feeding those who have and ripping off the people who don't, but big changes are underway, and Pope Francis is clearly a good indicator.
Okay, thanks a lot.
That does it for this edition of It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. If you'd like to stay current with Ellen's writing and commentary, visit ellenbrown.com. And if you'd like to know more about public banking and related developments around the country, please visit publicbankinginstitute.org. Visit them on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Public Banks Now. Our thanks to our guests today, and especially to our committed sponsors at Payment Management Merchant Credit Card Services, dedicated to economic justice and fairness and the creation of new American public banks. Payment Management offers complimentary analysis of your current credit card needs and expenses at paymentmgmt.com. For Ellen Brown, I'm Walt McCree. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on It's Our Money with Ellen Brown.